I offer my most prayerful and loving pranams at the feet of my beloved Sadhguru, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Sai Ram, dear sisters and brothers, I hope you all are having a good time at the retreat. I know I am. Every moment and every speaker and every program and every presentation here is, you can know, as Karthik just said, is divinely orchestrated, and you'll see a connection, and there's a message for every one of us. Not all of us may take the same message home, but at this point, what we need is what we take home. We don't have to remember everything. And this is an interesting anecdote that comes to my mind as I was listening to him and as I was thinking how to start off, because it's always, when you stand here in Swami's presence, one never knows how to start. And then once you start, one never knows how to end. That's why you need the red flags and the 10-minute signs. Yesterday I was so conscious about that, I actually stopped 10 minutes earlier. And I told Maya, she was surprised. She said, you actually stopped 10 minutes before. So the anecdote goes like this. Mr. Narasimhan, he was then the chief editor of the Hindu, and many of us know him, one of the elderly devotees of Baba who Swami would, you know, have friendly conversations with. And so he said, Swami, so many years I have been listening to your talk. So many discourses I have been listening. But unfortunately, this mind is so poor, it cannot remember all that you spoke. How do we remember, Swami, everything that you taught us? You've given so many discourses and so many writings. How can I remember all of this? And then Swami made a very beautiful point there. Again, you know, he doesn't think, give me 2 minutes, I'll get back to you. There's no such thing with Swami. It's almost instantaneously he said, okay, do you remember what your wife cooked the day after your marriage? He said, Swami, I don't know what she cooked. 1 week after your marriage, do you remember what she cooked? Leda, Swami, who will remember like that? Okay, how about last year on this day, what she cooked? Swami, how can I remember all this? Last week? No, Swami. Yesterday, what she cooked? Yesterday night, I can tell you, Swami. Swami said, then he made a beautiful point. He said, you didn't remember all what she cooked 10 years ago. You didn't remember what she cooked even last week. But at that moment, didn't it feed you? Didn't it provide you the nutrition that you needed at that moment? Adi chalu, he said. At that moment, you see how powerful it is. So don't beat yourself if you say, oh my gosh, I read that book, but I don't remember anything. At that point of reading the book, something sent home, some message you took home. And then that nourished your soul and your spirit, and that empowered your spiritual journey for the next few steps. And then you meet somebody else, you get some other message, and that powers your next few steps. And that's what it is. This is a nourishment. You don't have to remember everything that you discussed here and every point that you made and every note. You don't have to go back. But in your heart, if you go back and ask myself, what is it that I'm taking home from this retreat? There will be one or two or three messages that you need at that point. Nourish that message, absorb that message, and let that be your guiding light for the next few steps. So this is how Swami taught us on every small conversation had a divine meaning that continues to guide me and continues to guide all of us every single day. That's why I said he was a giver, and the only thing I learned from him was the quality to give. Somebody asked me yesterday after my talk, so when does one stop giving? I said, you don't stop giving, but you stop consciously giving when giving becomes your nature. Then you don't think that you're giving. So when, you know, there is this quote of Swami, which says, love, duty without love, duty without love is deplorable, he says. That is easy to understand. Correct? You're doing something for somebody, your parents or your child. Okay, somehow I have to do it, and you just curse the food and put it on the table. I know nobody does that. But that's deplorable. Why do you do that? Right? That's easy to understand. Duty with love is desirable. All right, that's also not too bad. you're doing your duty, but you're doing it with love and saying, this is my duty, I have to do it. Let me take care of my parents, let me take care of my children. You're doing your very best with love. But he says it's desirable. And then comes the last one. For many weeks, I had problem even understanding this when I was in Puttaparthi. The last one, he says, love without duty is divine. Love without duty is divine. So I was scratching my head. I said, so you give up duty and just love? That's too easy. Don't do anything. Just say, I'm going to love everyone. No. The point there was, your actions have become so much out of love that you don't worry whether it's my duty or not my duty. It is out of love. Pure love. Then you don't say, this is my parents, therefore I have to look after them. This is not my parents, so I will dedicate some of my spare time to them. Or these are old people, I don't have time, I'll do it next week with them. Love will cease to distinguish between what is mine and what is not. And therefore, your actions will be only out of love and not even out of a sense of duty. So giving becomes, when giving becomes your second nature, you don't worry about, should I be giving this, should I be giving that, am I a good giver, am I a bad giver? None of that matters. Giving becomes your second nature. A simple point, if you want to practice it on every day, when we go to park in front of a shopping mall or anything, instinctively we grab the closest, generally, there could be exceptions. Instinctively we grab the closest parking spot so it's convenient. If for a moment we think, maybe there'll be somebody older than me or elderly than me who wants to walk, let me take a little further away and walk the rest of the distance. Now that is an act of giving. Nobody knows, nobody will understand, nobody needs to. It is just your nature to say, let me park a few blocks away. I mean, another 100 steps of walking is not going to harm me, it's only going to help me. You can make exceptions when it is raining heavily or pouring or you have a child. That's different, but generally I'm saying. Or do we first go and grab, oh, here's your parking lot, that is available. Let's go. Sairam, Swami's grace, I got the closest parking lot. But somebody behind you could be an older person who might be actually having a difficulty to walk. Why not assume, let us leave this spot for somebody else and let's do something. A simple thing like that. So when you think of the smallest things in life, can you give in the smallest aspects, then the bigger things become easier. The big things sound difficult to us because we don't worry about the smallest things. And this is what Swami's teaching was so powerful, that it was the small things that we noticed how we gave. And I'm sharing this anecdote, and it comes to my mind here, this experience, not because it was me, but I can vouch for it. I was in this part of his experience, but it shows how he took care of every single boy, and I was one among the hundreds there, right? So this was a day before the convocation. It was a world conference. Swami's come for the rehearsal. He finds time to come and watch a play that is going to represent his college, his mission, right? So he comes and watches the final rehearsal, dress rehearsal, he watches. And then there are many, many instances that happen, the small things that happen with Swami. So there was one drama, for example, when he comes backstage, he's looking at all of us, and then he looks at me. I was supposed to be the school teacher, and Brother Srikanth, you know, Srikanth Vaidyanathan, his parents are here, and it's such an honor to meet them. And his brother is here as well. So he was the young Satya. That's how Swami grabbed him, and Swami adored him so much. He created a gold chain for him at the end of the drama because he was playing Swami's role as the young Satya. And I was a villain. I was the school teacher. In all of Swami's drama, always the villain. Thank God it's a role, it's a drama. It's like that thorn, it's a drama, it's not real. And so I was the school teacher, and I had to wear a black coat and the panchagajam veshti, the veshti that goes this way. No, we are not used to it. We are used to wearing pant and shirt. So I somehow struggled, and some boy said, okay, we'll help you, and I tied it. I said, anyway, the coat covers most of it, and as long as that pallu is seen, that's good enough. And most of the time, I'm going to be sitting on the chair. Who cares? This is how we approach things. Hey, nobody is going to see all that. Just manage it, right? But Swami comes. He's looking at, he comes backstage, he looks at all of us, he says, Chee, what is this you're wearing? He looks at me, I felt shy, I said, Swami, I don't know how to wear, Chee, dunna patta. Then he comes to me, he lifts the coat And he says, hold this, I'm holding my shirt. He removed that pallu and he's standing behind and he's doing this whole pallu and tucking it in. This is so beautiful. And I was stunned. And he said, ah, ipudu bagundi. Nerchuko. And it is strange because many, many years later, now when I wear these for my everyday morning, when I do my upasana, I just decided to wear it just to honor that moment. And also one guru many years later said, you're doing these Navagraha pujas and all that, so when you do that, make sure you honor our tradition. Wear that panchakalam. When he told me that, it's almost like Swami telling, I taught you even how to wear it, so wear it. It's somewhere where you're proud of your tradition and culture. That is one small thing. The smallest thing mattered to Swami, not the big things, right? The other one I was going to start off with was, so the day before the convocation, he coming and seeing our rehearsal. And as he's stepping out, I ran towards the car, opened the door and waited near the car, just in case Swami had some last minute instructions to give, something that he wanted to say. So he was walking in and he was very happy with the rehearsal. As he was getting into the car, he noticed I had a small hole in the shirt. A very, very tiny thing. I must have scratched somewhere and something must have happened. So he said, chee, 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 chee. He poked his, finger. He aimed in the chee, chee, chee. And he sat off in the car and he's gone. And I felt, okay, I felt a little odd, but I was happy that Swami is happy with the drama. That's why he's making fun with me. And I kind of dismissed this whole thing because it was such a small thing. My whole concept was in how the play should come and we are all working towards the last minute preparations and all that. So this little thing didn't matter to me at all. The next day, November 22nd, early morning, everybody is sitting and we were sitting somewhere at the back. Swami comes out for darshan. Now there's the president of India and all of these VIP sitting. He's coming out with a small little brown envelope. And he comes, as soon as he steps out, there's the bhajan hall door to his right where the boys are sitting. And there are VIP sitting in front of him in the veranda and there are boys again on this veranda at 12. These are before the days of Kulwant Hall. So as soon as he came, he entered the bhajan hall and he looked for me and he said, where is Iyer? And so I was sitting at the back, I rushed to Swami. And even before I reached all the way, it was about 20 feet away, he flung the big brown envelope to me. He says, Patko, there is a piece of shirt piece, Sundi, stitch a good shirt. And he went off a darshan. Now, why would Swami, why would he pay attention to such a small thing? It was not like I was standing there naked and bereft of food and clothing, right? It wasn't that. It was that small little thing that mattered to him. And he wanted to correct that small little aspect. And this is what, when you compare and you understand Vedanta, they says, anoraniyan mahato mahiyan. God is in the smallest of the small and the largest of the large. God exists. This, that consciousness exists, takes care of the smallest things. If we can take care of the small little givings, the small little things like fighting for parking place, you don't have to fight. Go a step further and say, I'm going to give this up. Maya has, Maya, my wife, not Maya, the Maya. I get into trouble when I just say Maya, assuming you know my wife. Because somebody asked me, who cooks food in the house? And I say, Maya cooks. So I had a problem. I said, no, brother, Maya is the name of my wife. Oh, ho, 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 sign up. So I just had to make clear. So she gets a dig at me. So she says, okay, are we parking close today or are we giving space to your so-called elderly people? So we have fun, of course, but then it's the little things that matter. The little things that matter. So Swami was one day in a matter of sports meet and all. He's come and watched us play basketball and Brother Jayant, and it was reminding me of that one table was there and there were 300 boys trying to fight, play for one table. Anyway, so Swami came and watched all of this. And so in one small discourse, he said something to the boys in conversation that stays with me about the small things. He said, table tennis baga aadutunnaru meeru, you all play table tennis well. I also used to play table tennis in Rajahmundry. I used to play table tennis. I will hold my robe with one hand and I will serve with one hand. I also know how to do it and all. And then in the course of that talk, and I grab this and I apply that in my everyday life, with Sai, if you will. What he said was, the table, you can't put the ball too high. Then that fellow will hit it very hard. You can't hit it too low, it will go into the net. He's explained to us as if we don't know, right? But that's how childlike Swami becomes. He is excited about the game. You have to hit it at the right height. You know, you have to practice that. But don't look at the net while doing it. Ikkada chuda, the control is in your hand. Ikkada koncham itla chesthe kinda potundi. Koncham itla chesthe pedda pedda akkada potundi. Koncham ikkada control cheyandi. Adhe life kuda chinna chinna vishayam pedda peddaga avutundi. And he passed on and he went on, continued. But I thought, oh my God, that is so beautiful. The small little, if I want to reach out there, he says, don't keep your eye there. Watch here, where it all begins with. The little, the slightest angle change here will take the ball somewhere else there. The slight change here will take 1 foot away or 1 foot lower or 3 feet higher or 3 feet lower, above the net, below the net, all depends on the little angle change, the minute angle change that you do with your wrist. So, and he said, "Ide life kuda," and he kind of brushed it and went on. But it was enough for us to catch that moment that it was the little things in life that actually make you big. And that's why Swami paid attention to how you sit, how you stand, how you eat, how you speak. Everything mattered to him. Because he said, in these little things, I can tell you who you are. I can watch the way you sit and desire and tell you who you are. I can see your company, I can tell you who you are. It is those little things that we need to focus on in order to live a spiritual life. Now, it makes different. This is like Zen. You read in Zen, you say, oh, where the Zen master, you go for training, he says, go sweep the floor and I'll teach you Zen. And you're sweeping the floor for 6 months and you're like, wow, this is Zen. I need to go out for Zen. This is Zen personified. This is Zen personified. Swami says, pay attention to the smallest things, how I fold the paper and keep. Even in his room, when he would finish reading a letter, he would insist that there was a clean waste paper basket there. So he would tear it and put it there. And even when that got full, and he's in a conversation, he's talking, and that has got full, he's not got up and gone. So you can't just go in the middle and take the basket away to empty it. So you just wait and then he will start doing it and keeping it in the carefully where, you know, between him and the chair, he will start putting all that torn paper there. And when he gets up, he will indicate. So you'll have to immediately clean. Every small little action of Swami represented one thing, that he paid attention to it. He paid attention to it. Every act of giving, he paid attention to it. You know, that is why he said, you know, how many of us think, we are giving it free. What is there? A little this bag or that bag. That is not how Swami worked. That is why he did what he did. It is that small thing. For example, it was my father's 60th birthday. And so Swami sent dhoti and sari because he called them for interview. He said, let them wear this and come. So sari for my mother and dhoti for my father. He had sent it through Colonel Jogarao. So Colonel Jogarao came to our room late night and he said, Swami has sent this for you. And then he said, Dandapani, it's my father's name. He said, Dandapani, you're doing some special, your wife does some special puja, what, Amma, what are you doing, some special puja? She said, I don't know, what are you talking, why? She said, no, see, what happened, Swami opened the cupboard, and Swami is picking up the sari, right? Swami opened the cupboard, and he's looking at the saris. Dhoti he gave Dandapani, one white dhoti, because there's not really too many colors in dhoti. It's not like these days. Anyway, so he looked at the saris and says, Sundarayar's mother is like our skin color. So what sari will look good for her? He's thinking it's him loudly. And then he's picking up a sari to give. Idi ichese, idi bagontundi. And if some of you are new here, I just want to make it clear that the purpose of this anecdote is to show you how Swami focused on the smaller thing. It's not who were the recipients, it really didn't matter. We were not great donors. Please let me make that very clear. My father didn't write big checks. In fact, he tried to write a check and Swami got so angry, he came and flung it at me. He said, did I ask you money? Go pack your baggages and leave the ashram. He got so angry that my father wrote a donation check. The point is, all that didn't matter. It didn't matter at all. The point is, when Swami wanted to give, he paid attention. Even in, it was again as part of the 60th birthday or some birthday, it was Narayan Seva, he'll be distributing food. He didn't distribute to the thousands there, but he would distribute for quite a bit till he starts sweating. You know, his back will be sweating, his armpits will be sweating because he's wearing silk. And we will be carrying buckets and going with him. And he'll be holding the bucket with one hand and he'll be serving. So as he bends down and serves, each one he said, Bangaru, tinandi, bangaru, bangaru, baga tinandi, bangaru, baga tinandi. He'll go on repeating to each one. Bangar, bangar. And just whispering, not like somebody is recording all this on camera. These things, this is the beauty of somebody who is giving personified, who knows nothing else but giving. And that comes because he was working from, this is what I realized as a young boy, trying to understand who Swami was. Because I didn't come from a family of devotees of Swami. I had no background of what Swami was. The books I read was the only background. But I couldn't believe what the books read because I said, if I believe this, my life will completely change. This is too huge to believe. I need that first-hand direct experience with him. So every small little thing that he did mattered. Every small little thing that Swami did matters. And what I saw in that few years, the first few years of watching him closely, being, and he gave me that divine opportunity for which I'm so grateful because it transformed my life completely. What I believed at that moment was he was tapping into a source that is infinite in its capacity to give. He was tapping into that source. He was not looking at the sources like what is the bank balance and what is my educational qualifications or what you and I look into before giving. What do I have to give? He didn't have anything, yet he gave. Why? Because he was tapping into a source that had unending capacity to give. Think about it. This doesn't may not be clear in black and white. It never is. But the concept of giving without the thought of having is a divine concept. Love without duty is divine. There were so many instances such as this. In the same manner of Swami's, the point that was raised by one of the psychiatrist, doctor or psychologist, was when we talked about giving and thoughts, we talked about impulsiveness, impulsivity, whether being impulsive is good thing or bad thing, or impulsive being impulsive itself could be a negative thing. But can you impulsively do something good? Can love become your impulse? It has set me thinking. I'm thinking about it. Maybe impulse is a technical definition which psychiatrists may define it separately from what a normal common man would understand impulses. But when you see, for example, a baby smiling at you, you would impulsively smile back, right? So certain times, I guess, if that is the right way to understand impulse, then there are some things which impulsively can be good as well. With Swami, I hate to use the word impulse because the impulse word has something which may not convey this properly. But that is why Swami used the word embodiment. So in the inauguration of the hostel, when I jumped through the rings of fire, and many of these know this story, so I'm not going to go into this detail, but I had to jump through three hoops of fire at one stretch. And then by the time I jumped, the boys who were holding the rings were, it was so hot, they let go. So the rings got attached to my body, and I landed on the ground with all the three rings of fire blazing in the ground. And this was at about 7:30 at night. It was pitch dark because we wanted things to be dark so that it's more effective, dramatic thing going on. So Swami is sitting diagonally opposite at one end of the hostel quadrangle, and I'm running from the other end. The three rings are right in the center. Hundreds of devotees are formed, sitting in the circle. They're up in the halls and in the rooms, looking out from the windows and in the veranda and everything. As I was running through this, I jumped and I didn't know I'm not going to clear, but then I was on the ground. With all these people, a few of them sitting where you are, about 10, 20 feet away, guess who was the one at that moment, because every second mattered even there, right? Because the fire is blazing. I don't know this. This is all happening so fast. I fall down, I open my eyes, I see fire, I look up, and there is Swami who held my hand and pulled me out. Swami held my hand and pulled me out. Now, this was not a vision. He didn't appear there. He had already jumped from the jhula and he started running towards it. Love without duty. Omniscience is one thing. Omnipresence is one thing. To give yourself simply because at that point he needs to be saved. So it didn't matter that he was wearing silk robes. It didn't matter that his was highly flammable dress. and omniscience, he could have said, stop this way before this even happened. Oh, and then tell me, I know this would have happened. No, there was not, that is why I'm saying it was not even a sense of duty there. It was pure love in action. That day I understood when Swami said, I have a 1,000 mothers' love. I said, this must be it. It can't be anything else but pure love, where you don't even think of yourself, but you go out to help others. This is why I say Swami is the greatest role model in every aspect of our lives. Even we want the highest spiritual understanding, he is a perfect role model because he shows what you can do with your life with that highest spiritual understanding. How empowered can you be? You don't need education, you don't need riches, you don't need networking, you don't need to know 100 different languages, you don't need to do anything. Yet, just being true to your divine self, you can be that one unique person. And all of us have a unique thing, right? Our DNA is so unique that you cannot have another Karthik. You cannot. You cannot have another Murali. You cannot have another Sundar. There is no other person other than you. Capitalize on that uniqueness. Why are you sacrificing that uniqueness to become like something else? To become like somebody else? Why are we getting into that? This is what I was talking to the SSC kids yesterday. Is why are we getting into this zombie-like lifestyle, this sheep mentality? Oh, everybody is doing, I have to do. Why? Because everybody else is doing. Why? What will others think of me if I don't do this? So let me also do it. Why? If you want to have a bhajan and just offer vibhuti as prasadam, do it. No, everybody gives prasadam. If I don't give prasadam, nobody will come to my house. So because everybody is doing, you're doing it. Because you're doing it, somebody else is doing it. Guess what? At the end of the day, everybody is doing mighty prasadams at the end of the bhajan. Prasadam becomes more important. Bhajan is less. People are cooking, sweating, and all it needs is one person to say, you know, come to my house, vibhuti prasadam. Because everybody can stop anywhere and eat. It's not like hungry people are coming. In India, it's different. If you call, you know, really poor people and say, let's sing bhajans, I'll feed you at the end. That is different. Nobody is starving. But it becomes, everything, you know, revolves around the bouquet. Buffet. everything revolves around the table. So how can you be that one person who can make a difference? You know, I think it was George Bernard Shaw who said, when you're 20, you don't care about what other people think. When you're 40, you're always worried about what other people think. And when you're 80, you realize other people were not thinking about you at all. It is so true. Really, nobody cares. Nobody really cares. They'll gossip about you for 2 days, and that is all it is. If you have the best quality bhajans in your house, and you offer Prabhuti Prasad, they will come all the way because that joy that they get in bhajans will far supersede the other things. That desire for food will go, the consciousness will be so high that they will enjoy that peace and they want to carry that peace with them rather than break it down into a huge social network. I'm just giving that bhajan thing as an example. But this is how we tend to follow what everybody else is doing. Then it becomes a tradition. So-called created tradition. Then we say, stick to tradition. This is what it is. But here comes Baba. Look at Swami's form. And when I talk to these youngsters, this is a point when I bring it up when we talk about Swamis as a leader. The uniqueness that he adopted, the form that he adopted. How many saints or sages or spiritual people at his time had this hairstyle? Allow me to say this. The fashion was beard, skinny looking, old. The older they were, the more famished they look, the more spiritual they were. He's looking so famished, he must be really spiritual, right? I have respect for all the gurus from the depth of my heart, but I'm just sharing a very unique thing that I think, and here comes Swami, completely against everything that was established so far, he adopts his magnificent Afro hairstyle, which is very, very unique to Indians. If this was in Africa, it would have been one more kid, a little more hair, right? But this was in India. Nobody has an Afro hairstyle like this. And with a Afro hairstyle, yes, Prasanna, I know you are there. I could feel that look from there. You're like, wait a minute. But nobody was. Now, a 13-year-old declaring a mission, not only was location, as I explained yesterday, not only was people telling him, please don't start in Puttaparthi, nobody will come to that place. People might have told him, look at your hairstyle, at least look like a guru. You are looking like a fancy star. But he adopted that. He left such an indelible mark that this will be the avatar of Kali Yuga. Nobody can ever duplicate this. That is the uniqueness of it. So each one of us has that uniqueness. We capitalize on that uniqueness. We will be able to serve Swami in our own way. We will become happy and wonderful instruments of Swami if we say, this is what I can do, and let me capitalize on that. And when you capitalize and start giving, you will be given more opportunities to give. There will be very little scope for negative things to happen. I have shared this story before as well, but this is again a very powerful lesson Swami taught. Many years ago, and for those of you who know, bear with me, but like I said yesterday, these are stories of Rama and Krishna. You just have to, every time you relive it, you learn something new. I learn something new every time I think about it or I talk about it. So, when my father was hurt, I was in Puttaparthi. My father was robbed in Haryana, and because he was the accountant of a factory started in a village, I think somebody thought the accountants still carry money in their big bag or something. So they beat him up and tried to rob him. Of course, they didn't get any money, but he was beaten up, not very badly, but yes, he was hurt. He was taken to hospital and all that. So when I got this letter a few days later, I felt a little helpless that I'm here and this happened to my dad. But at the same time, I was thinking, my father is such an honest person. He would do his pujas in the morning. He would be completely like 100% honest. That's why he grew up with this company called Parle Gluco. Literally, he stayed with them for 50, 55 years or so, right from the time they started in a small shed. Parle Gluco biscuits, if you know that. And so he grew up with them, and simply they kept him as an accountant simply because they knew they could trust him, if not anybody else. So I said he had lived such a good life, and he was so dharmic. But then why would somebody rob him? And so my bigger question was, why would bad things happen to good people? So what's the point of this doing good if there's so much negativity in the world out there? And the reason I'm sharing that is because all of us come to that point when saying, I'm doing so much good, but still there's so much negativity. And you get discouraged and pull back. And we say, you know what, there's no point doing this. Or your children might ask, what is the point, Mom, doing all this? See, this is happening, that is happening. Or we look around us and it seems to us that the world is full of negativity. It seems to us simply because that we choose to watch the channels that are giving us this negative feedback, right? The world may not be that negative. In any case, my question that as a young boy that time, when I was 22 or so, was why is bad things happening to good people? Then what is the point of doing good then? Where does it end? What is the purpose then, right? And so what I did was, I couldn't ask Swami. You know, one thing was you could never raise your hands and say, Swami, I have a question. You can't do that. Even with Swami's presence, everybody waits. Swami will say, Aim Samacharamo, any questions? Even with boys, we'll all go sit. We'll go sit at Swami's feet and watch him. And he'll say, And he'll take his own time. There will be silence. There'll be moments of just sitting and then he'll say any question. Or he'll say, Aim Samacharamo, what? He'll ask each one, and only those person will answer. Nobody will suddenly get up and say, Swami, I have something to say. That was not the practice, because you had so much respect for Swami and the space that Swami had. And he commanded that respect. And so I couldn't ask this question to Swami, but I had to, somehow it was eating my heart out. So I wrote a letter to Swami, why good things happen to bad people, Swami? Then what is there? How do you overcome this kind of negativity in your life? How do you overcome this negativity in your life? And so I wrote it. I kept the envelope in my pocket. And I said, I'll think if I want to give or not, I'll decide, because I had to see Swami's mood and give. Pardon me. But that's what happens to us foolishly. When we live so close, we think of Swami as another divine. He's divine. We know he's divine. We know he knows everything. But still, he catches us into the, now I'm using this word, the real Maya. So I kept the letter in my pocket. I was in the room. Swami was passing by. He didn't even ask Yemtaradi and all. He just picked up the letter and went. And as soon as he picked up, he said, oh gosh, I should have kept it in my pant pocket. I didn't realize it was here. I didn't even think whether it was ready or not. As he was going upstairs, he just picked up the letter and went off. And then I said, oh gosh, this is a philosophical question I've asked. I don't know, Swami will say, aim to pitchy pitchy or something he might. But I left it. Now the cat is out of the bag, as it were. And later in the evening, when I went to Swami's room, the letter was torn and kept. So I had to clean. I knew Swami had read the letter. So, and then I kept trying to meet his eyes to see if I get any response from Swami, but there was no response. It was almost like, then I thought, maybe Swami didn't understand my... I'm speaking in Swami's presence, so I can't lie. Honestly, I thought maybe I should have used a simpler English or I should have explained it clearly. Maybe I asked a too sophisticated question, I don't know. This is how sometimes, how blasphemous the mind can be. You know, let me just pause here for a second and come to the point here is how, you know, when Swami says, give your mind to me, however grotesque, however, I'm not quoting Swami because I don't know the exact words. Professor Kasturi used to say this often, and it has always stayed in my mind. But the gist of it is, however grotesque, however doubtful, however dirty, however rotten your mind is, give it to me. I will purify it and give it back to you. Now, it's very easy to hear that. It's pleasant to hear that. It's nice to hear that. But how do you actually give your mind to him? That means you break all your conditioned thinking and offer it to him, literally at his feet, and say, you do it. You fix it for me. But we don't do that. Going back to the same snake incident yesterday, when Swami said, hey, adu paambu kaadu, paamba, I corrected him. I said, no, Swami, it is a snake. He said, neeku adu paambu undavachu, naaku adi mullu, mullu, mullu. For you, it might be a cobra, a snake. For me, it is a thorn, thorn, thorn. Go, he said. He stuck to his reality, and I failed to realize that his reality is more real than what I saw. This is why Swami says, why was Arjuna chosen to be the recipient of Gita? Gita is the teaching of the highest Vedanta explained in the form of 800 verses. You don't need to know the Upanishads, you don't need to know the Vedas. The entire Vedasara is in 800 verses given to you. Practical philosophy, how to build your lifestyle around this principle. Who was chosen for it? Swami would say, a warrior was chosen. Why not the great sages who are with Krishna? Why were the yogis and the tapasvis and all of them were sitting for self-realized? They should have been recipients. Dharmaraja, among his brothers, Dharmaraja, the one who followed righteous path, he should have been the recipient. Why didn't he get it? The valorous Bhima, he should have got it, right? But why was Arjuna? Arjuna, everywhere he went, he married one girl, right? So Swami said, everywhere he went, like this, why was he chosen? You wouldn't even think he was a spiritual person. He was chosen for the Gita? Why? And Swami says, this is why. Because he surrendered completely to Krishna. And explains his reason also. He says, Krishna takes him to the forest one day and tells him, Arjuna, look at that beautiful bird, that beautiful pigeon up in the tree. And Arjuna says, yes, Krishna, it's beautiful pigeon up the tree. Krishna says, no, I think it's a parrot. And Arjuna says, yes, Krishna, I'm sorry, too, it's a parrot. Krishna says, no, I think it's a swan. And Arjuna says, oh my gosh, what was I thinking? Of course, Krishna, it's a swan. Then Krishna turns to him and says, don't you have your own mind? Don't you have your own eyes? You're simply saying yes, yes to what I am saying. What is this? And then, as Swami recounts beautifully, Arjuna said, Krishna, I trust your eyes more than I trust mine. That was the level of surrender. That was the level of surrender. When I heard this, I was like, wow, this is amazing. And yet many, many years later, after staying 10 years with Swami, after getting all this quote-unquote yoga experiences and everything, yet when Swami looked into my eyes and said, adi paambu kaadu, adi mullu, I said, no, Swami, adi paambu. I corrected him. I feel so ashamed every moment I think of it. Maybe I would have got liberation at that point. It was not meant to be. I corrected him. This is what happens to us. We hold on to our reality. We hold on to our mindset and we hold on to that. And so therefore, we are unable to offer that mind to Swami. And this is why Swami says, offer that mind to me and I will change it. So when he took this letter, I was thinking, maybe Swami didn't understand. That is why I was holding on to my reality rather than saying he would have known. But that those days I was understanding Swami, I was discovering him. And so a week passed, 10 days passed, perhaps 2 weeks passed, I don't know. But I had also forgotten about it. I didn't rewrite a letter to Swami. I didn't try to re-explain it. I said, let me leave it as it is. If maybe I'll give it time. And other things, little things took over. So I kind of, that went down to the back of my mind. Though the question was still there. One afternoon, every afternoon, Swami will finish his lunch, then go out for a drive, come back, and then he'll go upstairs. And once he's upstairs, he'll shut the door. And about two hours or so, he won't come out. So this was that time we will clean up downstairs interview room and all that stuff to make it ready for the evening darshan. And in the before that, we go to the dining hall and clean all the plates, right from Swami's plate to everybody's plate who we had with Swami. So that was going on. So we would take turns to do that. That afternoon was my turn. So I was carefully washing these plates. Even there, when you're living with Swami, silence is not a concept. Silence is not something you have to practice. Silence is what you have to really be. Even if you go like this, he will come out and say, who was clearing the throat? Are you not well? Are you not well? Go drink water. So every sound upsets Swami. So that was a space he was in. Complete pin drop silence literally meant pin drop silence. And every boy can vouch for this. In Swami's presence, it was always like that. So cleaning, washing vessels is so important because you can't go thada-thada-thada, wash it and dry it like that. You can't. So you had to be very careful, and therefore we took turns to do it. And that afternoon I was carefully doing everything, and the last, it was coming down to one last glass which was there. And as I was about to take the last glass, I was so involved because I had to be very careful, I heard the familiar, hey. More deeper than that. Let me try. I'm not as good as Karthik, but I'll try. Hey. The moment I heard A, I looked, and right here behind me, Swami was standing with his hands full, Em chestunnav. And I thought I made some sound or something. And so I was so scared, I just looked at him. And then he didn't give me a chance to say anything. He just looked at me, he said, this is what you all eat? Chee, chee, chee. Em tintunnaru meeru, this is all what you eat and all that. And so this glass was there with some dirt, not dirt, but leftover food, right? It just gets poured as you clean. So it was there. He said, chudo, in the glass lo enta galisundi. This glass has got so much dirt in it. So he opened the tap. This, to remove the tap, remove this, manchinir vela, manchinir. Do good, do good, do good. He opened the tap. He said, do good, anta galisundi. All the bite will come, the bad thing will come out. And then he says, but seeing the bad thing coming out, what do? He closed the tap. He said, you stop doing good water, you stop pouring it in. Because the bad is coming out, you're scared. Me bhayamu, these are the words he used. Me bhayamlu, me bhrantilu, your illusions, your delusions, your fears, all that is coming out. And because that is coming out, because you're doing good only, it's coming out, right? Because you poured good water in, the bad is coming out. So because that is coming out, what do? You stop it. You stop putting good water. Now, ippudu chudu, confusion, doubt, anni, good, bad, mixed, anta confusion. Then he said, yem chayala, do good, do good, do good, do good. He opened the tap and kept on opening till the water became full force. And he said, do good, do good, do good, do good, do good. And then the dirt came out completely, so much so, because the water is coming in full force. And then he became like a 5-year-old. He said, chudu, ippudu chudu, good in, good out, good in, good out. Ekada negative, ekada bad, bad e ledu, anta good, 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 good. And then he walked off saying, good, good, God is good is God, God is good. Something he was muttering and walked away. And I was just stunned. I was stunned that at that moment, so beautifully he taught that when bad things happen to good people should do more good, not stop from doing good. And that is their own. So, as we understand this later on in Vedanta, it explains that we have accumulated past. Whether we did good or bad doesn't matter. We have accumulated past. So that has to get burnt out. In the aspect of karma, there are arrows that have left the bow already. The arrow that has left the bow, even the self-realized person cannot do anything with that arrow. It has already left the bow. It has to meet its target. In other words, the karma that is already on track to get fulfillment will take place. That is why you had Ramana Maharishi, you had throat cancer, you had Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. All of them experience what? Because those are things which has to go anyway. Those are karmas, and Patanjali explains this beautifully. And I don't want to get into too much philosophy, but give you an idea of how we can relate this, Swami's understanding of this in a larger context, in the Vedantic context. Because everything Swami said has its roots in the Sanatana Dharma, the principles of Vedanta. And so those actions, you can't do anything about it. The arrow has already left the quiver. Let it, you ignore that. That is gone now. That is the fruit of that has to come. So that is what Swami is talking about as the things that is coming out of you. So let that happen. If it has to manifest in the form of an illness, let it come and go. If it is manifest in the form of some sorrow, some loss, something, it is your own insecurity, your own fear, your own me bhayamu, me bhrantilu. Your fear, your insecurity is manifesting outside as these circumstances. Let it come and let it go. But when that is happening, don't stop doing good. That is the time you got to do more good, to get it out faster. Give me more trouble so that this goes away. Let me give me the strength to do good so this will go away, right? That should be the quality of our prayer. Of course, let me finish that concept of karma, because the arrow is gone. He says the arrows in the quiver can stay. You don't have to use it. And they can slowly rust and never be used at all. The arrow in your hand, you can decide what to do with it. Either fire it or put it back in the quiver. So that is how the whole concept of karma is explained. So is destiny or will in charge? The arrow in my hand is my will. I can decide to shoot it or I can decide not to do it. The arrow in the quiver is their destiny. But that can change. That is when Swami says all your karmas can be wiped out. All of the arrows in the quiver that I've accumulated, all of that can go completely if I decide to choose, take the right action with this arrow in my hand. The one that is gone is gone. You don't worry about it. Swami would say always, past is past, right? We know this, past is past, forget the past. But with us, whenever we wrote letters, and I can speak for myself, when I wrote a letter for sorry to Swami, he would get so angry. Empty sorry, and he'll tear it. Why is it? Past is past, forget the past. Empty sorry, sorry, sorry. Adanta aipoyindi kada, you learned something, right? Learn the lesson and move on. Adi emi, that experience, why are you carrying? Why are you carrying that mental baggage with you? So we forget the lesson, we carry the experience with us. What we need to carry is a lesson, not the experience. Oh, you don't know how much money I lost. Oh, you come, I'll tell you, sit down, let's have coffee. We enjoy reveling in our suffering. You suffered? Oh, my suffering. Oh, my God. That disease really, you know, shook my faith in Swami. And we revel in that. Now you're building a whole negative world based on that negative experience. What was the lesson? Take that lesson, drop the experience, take the lesson and move on. That lesson will guide you in your future. So when you look into the past to draw from the past, you're not going back into the past, you're going back to the lesson that you learned in the past. When I look back to my past, if my life is Swami, if my days are Swami, I look back at these lessons that continue to inspire me. If I look back at the experiences, I'll say, oh gosh, where are those experiences gone? Where is Swami now? Why didn't I get it better? I should have been a better boy that time. I could have done all this. And I'll build a very low self-esteem because of what I did in the past. Forget the experience. There was a lesson I learned. I will take that lesson and move on. The lesson of humility, the lesson of gratefulness, the lesson of kindness, love, whatever it is that we carry on, whatever every experience teaches us in our life, take the lesson and move on. And when troubles come in your life, and it will come, right? Troubles come because we take every action based on some expectation or the other. When that expectation is not met, it becomes a trouble. The result becomes a troublesome because it is not according to what I expected. The problem is not in the action. The problem is not in the result. The problem is in my expectation of the outcome of this is what I wanted. It didn't happen. And therefore, I feel upset. I feel negative or so. What if I give up that outcome? Right? But even before we come to that, the fact is that sometimes when diseases come, when maybe separations happen in life, when there is death of near and dear one, and there's so many things that you could come to a point, and we have all been, there's no exceptions in this, because this is what Adi Shankara says, that this is what it is. This is what life is, punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam. This is what it is. This is part of life. And in that life, when we come across certain times where faith seems to be in a standstill, time finds it very difficult to move, and you're like, my gosh, every day I have to somehow push through this. How do I even manage to live? How do I get through this? Those are the moments that we need to focus on, how much I can give at that moment. That moment, if you can give, every other moment you will easily give. But in order to be able to give at that moment, when you are fine and dandy, start giving. So it works both ways. So it is like when you are drowning, somebody can't say, now, this is how I will teach you some simple strokes that you can survive. You're like, please, help, help. No, this is how you see, take a deep breath. It won't work. It won't work. At that point, just give him a stick, drag him out, put him, and then you say, all right, next time, in order that this won't happen, let us go to a pool, let us go to a coach, learn swimming. When everything is fine, you learn swimming in small, small steps so that you won't be in a state where you will be in a state of being drowned, correct? That is the idea. If the small little things in life we learn to give, the small little things, right from making my bed, or I know I've seen places where altars, there'll be small cobwebs under Swami's chair. And I would ask, why do you even have a chair? You don't need to have a chair if you're not able to. He said, no, but nobody will see all that. I said, is that what your approach is? Because nobody sees it's okay to have a cobweb under Swami's chair. But that's the point. The point is, don't do something for others' sake. Don't do something just because nobody else will see, and therefore you can push the dirt under the carpet. You'll say, people are sitting on top of the carpet, right? The dust can be underneath. It doesn't work like that. It is who you are is what matters. That is, who am I here at this point? Who am I? Do I like this? If I don't like this, I will not do it, irrespective of whether 10 people are watching or no people are watching. Whether 100 people are going to accept what I do or 200 people are going to think what I'm doing foolishly, it doesn't matter. This is who I am. This is what I make sense with, and this is who I'll be. A beautiful experience, Swami has shared this story as well, and it's quite popularly known. Sant Eknath goes to, and you probably know this story, but it's worthwhile sharing this here. He goes to a river for bathing, and he carries his student comes with him. And as he steps into the river to bathe, a scorpion who's on the stone stings him. And he shouts in pain, but then he picks up the scorpion, puts it on the rock. And then he is bathing, the scorpion falls back into the water, and then again goes and stings him. And again he takes it and puts it on the rock. Again it stings him. Every time it stings him, he shouts in pain. And then this student says, Guruji, why don't you just kill it? It is stinging you every time, and you're shouting in pain. And then Eknath says, the nature of the scorpion is to sting. My nature is to love. I cannot change my nature because this scorpion is stinging me. So here is an important point, a very, very beautiful point here that we need to understand. That we need not be bad because others are bad to us. Then you are giving them the power to change who you are. You shout at me, fine. Do I have to shout back at you? Who am I? If I am not the person to shout at people, I will say, you know what? Okay, I know you're angry. That's fine. Let's talk about it the way I can relate to it. You don't have to be a doormat where people can walk over you. That is not the point. The point is that you be who you are. So once V.K. Narasimhan, again, Professor V.K. Narasimhan, he told Swami once, and I was privy to this conversation as well. He said, Swami, so many people are saying so many things about you. These are days before internet and all. And he said, Swami, give me a chance. I'm the editor of the Hindu. Every day we can write an article about you. We can show these people who you are. We can tell the world who you are. Why you have, Swami, you're not doing anything to these people who are against you or writing things about you or whatever it was, right? And then Swami smiled and he said again without batting an eyelid. He said, "Ni Sai Gita chusava? Have you seen Sai Gita?" "Yes, Swami." "When she comes for the birthday, she comes fully dressed. You've seen her coming down the road?" "Yes, Swami." "When she walks down the road, all the street dogs bark at her." "Correct?" "Yes, Swami." "Does she stop at each street dog and say, 'Hey, I'm an elephant. You don't know who I am. I can crush you.'" Does she say that? She just ignores the street dog's nature. Papam, bal nature udhi bark chestundi. Sai Gita's nature, calmly walk. Sai Gita will do what Sai Gita does. Street dogs will do what street dogs do. This is where Swami compared himself. He didn't come down to the lowest rung and say, okay, I will prove I am God to you. Come on, let's do a debate. None of those. He said, this is who I am. I don't need your recognition. He didn't need devotees to tell him he was God. He didn't need somebody else to tell him he was not God. He was so clearly established in his own divinity that he needed no approval from anybody. And that is a great, great, great quality of a divine leader to me. Be established in your uniqueness. Take that uniqueness and share that uniqueness with the world. I wanted to share one more story briefly, and I see if I don't complete it now, and I have 15 minutes. If I don't complete this thought process, we'll see if Swami guides us to complete it tomorrow. But I'll try, because this is an important thought process that comes to me, and we face upon, we come across it as devotees of Swami, as fellow pilgrims in the spiritual path. The concept of surrender. Surrender is highly rated, the highest rating of all values. Somebody were to rate values in Vedanta, Sanatana Dharma, path of devotion, surrender, highly rated. Here is the beautiful thing. Once, let me share this small anecdote as to how this all started in my mind many, many moons ago, if you will. Once Swami was asking us to clean some place. He said, "Akkada poi chudandi, there is something in that room, go check it out." So we went the other side of the mandir. So if you're facing the Prashanti mandir, on your right-hand side, that is where Swami lives upstairs and downstairs interview room. On the left-hand side is all storage. Everything is stored there. And Swami, at one point, Swami would insist all the vibhuti packets are stored there, and from there it will go to the accommodation office. From accommodation office, it will go to devotees. He would insist, ikkade undandi, ikkade. So there was a vocational training institute, if you remember, they would make the vibhuti, they would transfer it to Swami's mandir, and he would insist that let it be here, and from here only it will go everywhere. Now, how valuable is vibhuti? But he knew what the value in that vibhuti was. I think it needed to be in that divine presence of his aura and the bhajans and all the divine sanctity. So every single packet that even we take today has that divine vibration from Puttaparthi. So Swami sent us to that room and he said, okay, get this thing. Akkada untundi chudandi, some box it was, so he sent us there. So as soon as we entered, two of us entered, it was dark. So we had a small flashlight. And so we put it on and we were trying to look for the switch because we just entered, and immediately again the familiar, "Hey, dunna pottulara," he said. So luckily we were not chatting or talking, because Swami is very, very, very strict about this. You come here for a purpose, do your work. It's you and me, that's it, one-on-one connection. There's no chatting in front of Swami or in his presence at all. If he catches you, you're in deep trouble. So dunna pottulara, luckily we were not chatting, so we looked at Swami. Yemti me flashlight, of course he said torchlight. Yemti me torchlight. Ikkada chuste ikkada kanipinchadu. Like, you know, if you see this side, you won't see here. If you see here, it won't see here. What is this? Na light lo chudandi. You know, these are all just casual conversations, okay? So he says, "Na light lo, see in my light." He put on the switch. Na light lo chudandi. Anni kanipistundi. And he walked away. Everything you can see in my light. And of course, we got the box and everything. And I said, there's something very beautiful Swami said that day. And as I understood this over the weeks, there's a powerful message. This little flashlight, as Swami would always say, is like your little mind. You point in one place, you can see that at one moment, I can only understand this. Everything else seems to be dark. Then when I look at that, I lose perspective of this, I look at only that. This cosmic perspective, this ability to do the smallest of the small and the largest of the small all at the same time, seems to be very foreign to the mind, because it doesn't do that. It's unable. So if I see that is why we are afraid of the future. We are not knowing where to go, what happens, what is going to be the next turning in my life, I don't know. And so we take that step out of fear, and then fear becomes our second nature. It becomes natural to be afraid to take our steps. And so Swami said, "Na light lo chudandi, anni kanipistundi. See in my light, you will see everything." And therefore he put on this room light and went away. Now to me, that is surrender. Surrender is not, and I'm going to combine all the teachings of Swami, this concept which I believe and I practice today. Surrender to Swami is not out of a sense of weakness. It's not an inability to decide that you go to him and say, "Swami, I'm surrendering to you. So here are two chits. Please help me select one." So Swami used to call some of these old devotees before Dasara and all and talk to them in our presence. So when they share the experience, we will speak about it, use that matter to speak and all that. He was helping us with subject matter to speech. But in that course, there were so many lessons he taught. He said to this one lady, Chudu, eppudu chuste chittu vestavu, chittu vestavu. Adhe bhakti yada, is that surrender, he asked. Swami, I don't know, Swami, but you only you can decide. I'm so confused. Swami said, yeah, last time you put chit for whether to buy this house or that house. You didn't put a chit saying, should I even buy a house? So he said, you're not doing that. So it is not surrender, it's convenience. So you don't know how to take a decision, you're afraid, so you put it on Swami. That is not surrender. He said clearly, that is not surrender. That is convenience. సులభంగా ఉంది అని చేస్తారు మీరు మీరేమో చేస్తారు అది హిస్టీరియా హిస్టీరియా అండ్ ఆల్ ఇట్ సో ద పాయింట్ ఆఫ్ సరెండర్ దేర్ఫోర్ ఇస్ నోయింగ్ దట్ దెర్ ఇస్ అ బిగర్ లైట్ ఇన్ విచ్ ఐ కెన్ సీ ఎవ్రీథింగ్ అండ్ అలౌయింగ్ దట్ బిగర్ లైట్ టు షైన్ ఇన్ టు మై లైఫ్ నాట్ మై లిటిల్ లైట్ సో ఇట్ టైస్ ఇన్ టు దట్ కాన్సెప్ట్ ఆఫ్ ఆఫరింగ్ యువర్ మైండ్ టు స్వామి వై బికాస్ లెట్ హిమ్ టేక్ ఓవర్ లెట్ హిమ్ డిసైడ్ యువర్ రియాలిటీ ఫర్ యూ నాట్ యూ అండ్ వెన్ హీ టెల్స్ యూ యూ ఆర్ డివైన్ విదన్ వై డోంట్ వి బారో buy and practice on that principle because that is his reality. He is seeing us as sparks of his divine principle. He is telling you are God too. Why am I then saying, no Swami, easy for you to say, who am I? I am just a humble devotee. That humble devotee being humble is also an act of ego. That is where it is. Swami would say, have you ever seen Arjuna sitting like a coward, meek? Have you ever seen Hanuman sitting like this, depressed? Never. And yet, these are the two examples of the highest surrender. Two warriors are examples of the highest quality that we need, surrender. Who are these examples? Arjuna and Hanuman, both are warriors. And Swami would say, Hanuman stood when everybody said, who are we to jump this ocean? We don't know where to go. We don't know whom to look for. They didn't have, pictures, Instagrams. Rama didn't send to people. This is how Sita looked. So nobody knows how Sita looked. Nobody knows what is the other end. How far is this ocean? So everybody is debating who are the greatest warriors who can jump, who can do this. And then Hanuman stands up and says, I will do this. Hanuman stands up and says, I will do this. Swami asks once, is that ego or bhakti? I will do this, ego, bhakti. So we didn't answer that because we really didn't have any clue. Swami said that is the highest form of bhakti because in his heart, he knew that I was Rama, not him. He knew that he was not the doer and therefore he could jump the ocean. See, that's a very subtle thing. He said, that is a surrender. So surrender, does it make you weak or does it make you powerful? It makes you more powerful. Why? Because you are not the doer. You don't have to worry. You don't have to be afraid. We are afraid because we think we are the doers. We are afraid and we work from the level of insecurity because we think, if I think I am the doer, then this I, this definition of I, brings in the whole luggage of all my past experiences, all my weakness in maths and everything comes into that picture. And so my I is limited by the way I have defined it from my birth. And that is why in Vedanta, that is why Swami says, surrender that I to me. Not because he says you don't have a proper will or you don't know how to live your life, I will live it for you. He says, by giving it to me, I will help you live it even more powerfully. Because now you can take a step out like Hanuman and say, I will jump the ocean. Not knowing where it is going to land, not knowing whom he is looking for, he jumped and he went only because he knew that he was a doer and not me. This is something we need to think of. This is the highest state of surrender. And Swami would say the story of Arjuna again, and we all know this in his beautiful Gita Vahini and other places, he has quoted this so many times in his discourses. Krishna is sleeping on the bed, Arjuna and Duryodhana both go to him. Why? Because Krishna is a common uncle for both of them. Okay? And so they both need his help in the war. Cousins are fighting. And this uncle is there in between. And both of them like him. Both of them go to his help. Both of them are standing on his bedside waiting for him to get up. So he opens his eyes falls on Arjuna. And he says, since my eye fell on Arjuna, I'll ask Arjuna first, what are you here for? And Duryodhana gets nervous. He said, no, this is not fair. I'm the elder one or whatever. I came here first, but because apparently Duryodhana came a few minutes before Arjuna came. Arjuna was wearing his kavacha and kundala and all that. It took a little time. So Duryodhana is there. He said, I came first, I need it. Because Duryodhana knows Krishna's army is extremely powerful. He said, Arjuna gets it, then I'm finished. I want that army. I really don't care for anything else, and that's why I came first. But Krishna says, you know, Duryodhana, I'm sorry, but my eyes fell on Arjuna. I give him the chance first to ask. And Arjuna has this choice. He has this massive, most powerful army of Krishna that can help him, because they were not having that many people as much as Kauravas already. And therefore, he could have asked for the Krishna's army. But before he would ask, Krishna said, this is a choice I'm placing before both of you. And Arjuna, you get your first choice. One will have my army, complete with all paraphernalia and all the secret mantras and the weapons and everything. The other one will just have me. I will be just a charioteer. I will not participate in the war. I will not lift a single weapon. I will simply be a charioteer. That is the lowest thing. Swami would say that is the lowest thing in the war, in the ranks. That was the lowest. You know why? Baba would explain. Because in the battlefield, apparently, when they're going in the chariot, there is no time for him to say, turn left, turn right. The warrior, because there's so much sound, right? Conches are blowing, trumpets, elephants and all that. And so he can't speak to him. So he will use his foot and press on the right side, and then this guy will know that he has to turn right. And he will press the left, and he'll have to turn left. So he has to, with his foot, indicate to Krishna where he has to go. So Krishna was sitting there taking that beating from Arjuna. So Krishna said, that is my position in the war. Such a low position. He said, I'm not going to do anything else. The other one can have my army. And Duryodhana kept his fingers crossed. Arjuna kept his hands folded. Arjuna said, I want Krishna. I want you. Krishna said, think twice. He said, no, I want you. You are enough for me. I don't want your army. Duryodhana was very happy. He got the army. And you know what happened. The rest is history. The point here is just having him by our side, knowing that he is by our side, is all that matters. It will change your perspective to life. Change your perspective to life. That is why surrender becomes a very empowering tool and not a tool for weakness. Don't assume surrender is when you're weak, when you don't know how to decide. That is too late. That is like learning to swimming when you're drowning. Practice surrender every day. Say, every thought of mine, Swami, I'm offering it to you. Don't own the thought. Don't worry about negative thoughts or positive thoughts. Offer kayena vacha manasendriyava buddhyatmanava prakritet swabhava. Everything. What I speak, what I think, everything. Karomi adhyat sakalam parasmai narayana eti samarpayami. Offer it. Offer to Swami everything that you do. And that becomes your habit. Every offering becomes your habit. Then you would say, oh, then I can do anything and offer. Think twice. If you really begin to offer, you will pay attention to the kind of things you're offering to Swami. You will pay attention to the kind of thought you're offering. You will pay attention to the kind. That is why they brought in this prayer concept. It's all to make you mindful. You're going to discuss mindfulness today, and you discussed it yesterday. The concept of prayer and mindfulness comes very powerfully. Yeah, because I am kaya navacha, that means whatever I speak, I'm offering. What did I speak today? I better be careful, because this is my offering to my chosen God. This is my offering to my Sadguru. So therefore, let every word of mine have been spoken with mindfulness. Every thought of mine have been thought with mindfulness. Every action of mine has been guided by mindfulness. And when I offer that to him, he becomes the owner of it. You are freed from the outcome of that karma. You are freed. You will not worry about it. So when you take a step, when you plan a project, when you're thinking of a house, you're applying for a loan, or you're looking at a career, you're going for a job interview, take that result of what you want or what you think should be, offer it at his feet. He says, Swami, this is what has come to me. This is what I think it should be. But you know better. If this is not meant to be, may it be so. If it is meant to be, so be it. Both will be your prasadam. Offer that situation, offer that person, offer that whatever it is that you want to, offer it at his feet and be free. It frees you from the stress. It frees you from tension. It frees you from worries. Because whatever the outcome, I don't mind. Now I've left it to Swami. I'm ready to take whatever it is. And believe me, my dear sisters and brothers, sometimes it may not happen the way you want it at this point, but it always happens. And He always gives you something that is 100 times better than you could have ever imagined. You just have to wait. May not be in your time, may not be in the way as you want it right now and here and now. It's like we are all 5-year-olds. We sometimes become adamant. Ippude kavala, I want it right now. I want my video game right now. And you throw and you wave your hand and sing a fast bhajan and want it happen right now. You cry. But He knows when to give it. That is the point of surrender. Surrender to Him and say, I will do my effort. I will put all my effort, but I'm not worried about the outcome anymore. I will focus on the excellence of my effort and leave the outcome to Swami. And at that point, He will definitely, and I can speak from my experience, and I know every one of you have the experience, that there will be a time when you look back and say, Swami, what You have given me is 100 times more than what I could have even imagined. And that is why everything from You is a prasadam for me. May Swami guide us and give us that strength at every step of our lives. He gives us the strength to make that offering. And let every offering of ours, whether it is a thought, whether it is a word, whether it's a deed, at the end of the day when I offer it, let that day that I offer to Him be the best day of my life. And tomorrow I make a vow to make it even better offering to Swami. And so the joy of being an offering, the joy of that connectedness with the supreme cosmic intelligence of the universe manifested itself as Satya Sai. When you make friends with that, why do you need to worry? You have the big boss that stands right behind you. Sai Ram.